I am not unaware that we have important work to do today after the service, and so I promise you I have kept it short, but there are a couple of things that I want to say. The text is simply this, the words of Jesus to the disciples. I do not give you as the world gives. I do not give you as the world gives. I work during the week, as I think all of you know, among a number of researchers. They come from a variety of fields and disciplines, and many of them, a significant share of them, are economists. I count them as my colleagues, although I am sure most of the time they are not quite sure what to think of me. I studied just enough economics as an undergraduate and as a graduate student to be able to read the Wall Street Journal without having a dictionary near at hand. My colleagues who live and work in that field are usually distinguished by their quantitative talents, which range from exceptional to truly profound. They have a gift for remodeling much of the world around us, things we don't even think of as involving economics in terms of utility calculations and transactional exchanges. There is a tired old line about economists being the sort of people who know the price of everything and the value of nothing. Actually, I don't agree with that. And in any case, that is an old line of Oscar Wilde's. And Wilde was not talking about economists, he was talking about cynics. Although it is certainly true that there are a good number of cynics to be found among the ranks of economists. One thing I have picked up from my colleagues is the discipline of their laser-like focus on a particular way in which we humans navigate across the landscape of the decisions we make. They are almost exclusively interested in how we come to an understanding of the usefulness of one option over the other. The idea behind this is that we always seek to maximize utility in every choice we make. So if you bought a cup of coffee on your way to church this morning, then you found more utility in the cup of coffee than in the $2.50 you handed over to obtain it. Or, if you decided instead to keep the money in your bank account, then you decided that the $2.50 had more utility than the coffee, at least in the moment of decision. That is the thinking behind a basic rule of experiments in economics, which is that choices, in order to be understood, have to be incentivized. For an experiment to explain something to us about how people decide, there has to be something real at stake in the picture. What that means is something of actual value, and especially actual cash money is at stake. That happens every day in my lab. It is an elegant way of looking at the world and of understanding why we make the choices we do. The problem comes when it escapes the safe corral of experimental science and becomes a kind of life philosophy, a worldview, a moral compass. Because then it becomes something else, something called economism. An idea that reduces all social facts, all relationships, all ideals, all actions to economic transactions of utility. In that world, there is no altruism. There is no charity. There are no public goods, the things we all contribute toward to make available for everyone. Or at least, there should not be. Nothing should exist without a transactional value. That sounds like a kind of bizarre, imaginary place. Except that it is closer to the reality of our culture than you might want to think. We live in a world in which the value of something is determined by its worth at exchange. The very simplest example I can come up with for what I'm talking about is Antiques Roadshow. I am completely hooked on Antiques Roadshow. And if you've seen the show even once, you know that each and every encounter between an appraiser and the person who lugged in mom's vanity or dad's whatever always follows a specific formula, right? Here it is. What can you tell me about this object? Now let me tell you about this object. Have you ever had it appraised? What do you think it's worth? And then the big reveal. Here's what it's worth at auction. And the little thing at the bottom of the screen. Shwee. With the thing we all waited for, right? The price. Everything, absolutely everything, follows that same logic. It is interesting, and it holds to the very end the thing we're most interested in knowing, the price. But that tells you something about how we see the world. Imagine a world in which the conversation in Antiques Roadshow was completely inverted. Because the thing we most wanted to hear was the story. Imagine that it began with the price. This is what it's worth. Now let me tell you about it. Wouldn't that be weird? We would probably get tired, bored, listening to all of that story. We live in a world suffused by the constant assessment of value. And in the midst of that world, we offer a message that has absolutely nothing to do with value calculated in that way. We offer something of immense value that has no price, that cannot be estimated in terms of its value at exchange, because it cannot be exchanged. It can only be given away. So just to frame it, in terms of Antiques Roadshow, we actually believe that the conversation itself between the two people, that's the point. For us, the price of the item is something completely irrelevant. And that by itself makes us something of an oddity to most of the world around us. There is often a fear that the church is becoming irrelevant, or outmoded, or out of step with the world around us. And, my friends, it is. We certainly are out of step with the world around us. But that is not only, or even mostly, because the church is stubborn and stuffy. It is because over the years of our lifetimes, the culture in which we live and move and have our being has been moving at speed in the direction of a narrow kind of economism. So why would anything we have to offer be at all interesting to the people around us? Back in the days that we all lived in a place called Christendom, when the stores were always closed on Sundays and you could never buy alcohol then, remember those days? When the school sports practices and the games were never scheduled on Sunday mornings, and the social norm was for everyone in the neighborhood to have a church of some kind or other to go to, back in those days, we never really had to figure out an answer to this question. But now we do. And the answer that we have is elegantly simple. It is that we have learned that being fully human, living a life as deeply and richly lived as possible, is only possible when you live in constant awareness of the possibility of the sacred all around you in everything that you do. It is only possible when you live in service to something greater, something larger than your own utility. And it is only possible when you escape the isolation of calculation and risk the possibility of being part of a community. A community of people who are all trying to figure it out just like you are. That is what Jesus gives as the world does not. That is what Jesus gives to anyone who tries to earn the title of disciple. That is the offer on the table. It has no price. In the fullest sense of the word, it is priceless. It comes to us not just despite our deserving or lack of it, but without any expenditure at all. All we can do with it, once we find it, is give it away. Because even though it is the thing we have that is most valuable, it cannot be sold for anything. 2,000 years ago, back in the earliest days of the church, Tertullian wrote in defense of these crazy Christians that were beginning to gather by pointing out that they had learned something of profound value. And here it is, quote, "Nothing of God can be obtained by money." Listen to that again. Nothing of God can be obtained by money. If we do not seem to easily translate into the terms of the world around us, that is why. But it does not matter. Because we have a pearl of great price, a treasure of incalculable value, given to us by the love that made us and drew us into community together, and is offered to us only for the cost of truly and fully accepting it for our own. Amen.